Begin the current daf mizat ksubis daf yedzayin. Begin on the bottom of daf tazayin mebeis, two lines up in the bottom of the yamut, where the Gemara continues the discussion from the previous daf, talking about different minhagim, different customs that take place at a Jewish wedding. So the Gemara says, "Turn by Linda Brisa, kitzad merakden lufnei hakala. How do we dance in front of the kala?" Which Rashi explains that to mean, "What do we say in front of the kala? How do we have rejoice in their wedding?" So the Brisa brings a machlekes. Beishamer, and they say, we continue on top of your zayin medalf. Kala kamayishahi, we say the kala as she is, according to her beauty and her distinguishing characteristics. According to that, what she has, that's how we praise her. Beisilaim, and they say no. They say kala no vachasuda. They say a beautiful bride and one that has a thread of kindness, of grace that surrounds her. Now amalem beishamer beisilah. So beishamer said to beisilah, Hare, picture the scene. Imagine she's lame or she's blind. So we say, wow, what a beautiful kala and what grace she has. But the Torah says, you should distance yourself from falsehood. I mean, how can you say she's beautiful when she's not? So Basil responded to Bishamai. According to your opinion, if somebody buys defective merchandise from the marketplace, should he praise and say, "Wow, that's a really good item you purchased," or should he say, "What? How'd you go ahead and buy something as ridiculous as that?" What you would say is obviously you would praise the purchaser for what he purchased because obviously it found favor in his eyes. For some reason, he liked that. Now, Taisa actually explains that Bishami would agree to that concept. Of course you would be meshabchenu be'enov of the person. When someone purchases something, beauty is in the eyes of the beholder. Everyone has their reasons for what they like, for what that they find in their spouse. But what Bishami didn't like was that the sages should have to institute a refrain which is commonly sung at weddings, kala no v'chasuda, but that's a falsehood. And the Torah should, the rabbis should not be instituting a refrain that will be violated midvash sheketir. And that still basically holds that no. Kala no v'chasuda is an appropriate thing to say, as we find that this is something that it's a mekach that he took, and it's something that he likes, even though you think it's ra, you shouldn't say it as you see fit, but rather as that person sees fit, which is a kala no v'chasuda. Now the Gemara says that Mikan, from the words of Basil that says that you should praise something that someone else bought, even though you think that that's a really big mistake, Amar Chacham, so the sages said, Lo ilum te daite shal odam mu'urever samabriyas. From Basil's opinion, you see that a person's philosophy should always be assimilated with that of other people. In other words, as Rashi explains what this means is, to do to people what they like, what they appreciate. And if somebody likes these type of things, even though you think that's not beautiful at all, but it's not what you like, it's what the other person likes. And if this person's marrying this woman, she finds favor in his eyes, and therefore you praise it and say, wow, how beautiful, even though you don't appreciate that. Well, it continues on this theme of, by the chasna, being mesameh chasam kala, kiyasur Rav Dimi Amar, when Rav Dimi came, he said, hachi mashru kameh kalasa b'merubah. This is how they used to sing in front of the brides in Israel. In Eretz Yisrael, like we say over here, that kala no v'chasuda. So in Eretz Yisrael, they would say, loy kechol, that is, this kala doesn't need any eye makeup, v'loy srak, she doesn't need the dye that they used to use to redden their face, their cheeks, like blush, v'loy pirkus, she doesn't need either the braiding of the hair. In other words, this kala doesn't put on eye makeup, and even if she wouldn't put on blush, and even if she wouldn't braid her hair, and still v'yalaschen, still there's so much grace that comes out of this woman, to show that she just has such inner beauty. Similar type, where obviously it's more figurative, is Kisamchu Rabban Reb Zeira, when the rabbis ordained Reb Zeira as a Rav, so they sang the same song, again, which has a deeper meaning. In other words, you know, some people it's the trappings about them, certain external skills that they have which make them look better than what they are, and they said that, no, you're the real thing, Reb Zeira, and that was the song they sang for him too, again, borrowing from what they would sing in front of the brides. Now when Kisamchu Rabban L'Reb Ami V'L'Reb Asi, continuing on this theme about what people would sing when they would ordain the rabbis, when they ordained Reb Ami and Reb Asi, so Shor Lehochi, they sang as follows, Kol Mendein V'Chol Mendein. In other words, the characteristics of Reb Ami and of Reb Asi, Smuchulanu, those are the type of people we would love to call Rebbe, our teacher, and to appoint them as judges. But leitis smuchulanu, but what we don't want to ordain for ourselves like leaders and rabbis, leimin sarmisen, which is from the word of sirus, not from those that invert halachas and they turn it upside down of what the real understanding of what halach is. But leimin sarmiten, like Rashi says in Masechta Sanhedrin, Daf Yudalid, that Samitin is from the term of Samartut, which means a rag. In other words, like those who don't give a good explanation for what the halacha that they're trying to say. So we don't want those types of Rabbanim either. Vamrilan, some say what they said was Loimin Chamisin, which is related to the word Chamishin, which is not from those who only give a fifth of the reason of what they're trying to explain halacha. And Veloimin Tumisin, which is a type of a bean lupine, which is Rashi, according to some Gersois, that it means regarding these empty type of people. So we're saying that they were singing that, yes, these are the types of Rabbanim that we want, but not like those that don't match up accordingly to be a leader and a rabbi in the Jewish people. Continuing on this theme about different songs, Rebbe Vo, Kavo Asimim Asifto, and Rebbe Vo would come out of the Beis HaMedrash, Lebe Kesa, on the way to the Caesar's house. So then Nafkin Amasa Debe Kesa La'ape, so then the maidservants of the Caesar's household would come out to greet him, Umashon Lehoch, and they would sing to him as follows, Rab De Ame, the prince of his people, Umad Barana, and the leader Dumasi of his nation, Baitzina de Nahira, the lit candle, which as Rashi explains, because his face would shine, as the Gemara says in Masechtas Babasa, that the shine of the skin of Rebbe Vo was similar and mi'ein, somewhat of what the beauty of Rebbe Yechanan, where there would be a shine coming out of him. So therefore they said like he was like a lit candle. B'riach Masach Lishlam, may your coming be blessed in peace. Nothing more goes back to what we had started off the daf with the Braisa regarding the Simchas Chasam Akalo, what they would sing. So Amr Lav Al Rabbi Yehuda Bar Eloi. So they said regarding Yehuda Bar Eloi, Shoyu Noitel Bachel Hodes, that he would take a branch of a myrtle, Umerakit Lefni Akala, and he would dance in front of the Kala. Now, as we said before, that we dance, and what do we say? Well, I mean, he would say, Kala Na Vachasudis, he'd be dancing, holding the myrtle, and saying, what a beautiful and graceful bride. Now, Rav Shmuel Bar of Yisroch, he would be Merakit Atlas. He would dance with three myrtles. Now, Rashi explains, means to say he would juggle. He would throw one up and catch the other one, so he'd be taking three different branches of a myrtle and be juggling them. Now, Amar Rav Zeir said regarding what Rav Shmuel Bar Yitzchak would do, he says, Kamach Sevelan Saba, the elder one is embarrassing us because he's disgracing the honor of the Talmudic sages. He's acting in a frivolous way, in an embarrassing way. What is he going and dancing like these empty type of people just juggling? Now, however, Kinach Namshe, the Gemara tells us that when Rav Shmuel Bar Yitzchak passed away, Ifsik Amude Denura, there was a wall of fire that separated between him, meaning his coffin, and the rest of the world. Now, Gemiri, there's a tradition that we have, that there's such a great miracle of having a wall of fire separating. Doesn't happen. Only if for one person in the generation, or most two in the generation, which that's a term that's used, like Chad Bedar, that's such a great person, and therefore that we see, although he was making it seem disparaging, as if that this was something disgraceful, but we see that he obviously was a great person. So Amr Abzeira, and there's three different versions of what he said, all related to the same root, etymologically speaking, of what he was saying, but three different nuances which mean different things. Either he said, Ahanyile shuti se lesaba, and then that would be from the word of a shoit, which is a branch. The branch of the myrtle that he would dance with, that obviously helped him. And you see how great that obviously was considered in heaven, that there was a wall of fire. Vamrila, and some say that what he said was, shtuse lesaba, that he's acting like a shaita, he's acting like a deranged person, where he's dancing, like juggling, he's a talmud chacham, he should be sitting honorable, and he didn't, so it was his shtus, that's the root, that helped him out, the elder. Vamrila, and some say what he said was, what helped him was, shitase lesaba, it was his philosophy, and his minig, that his opinion that helped the elder, that his sheet, I was saying that, no, this is obviously an important thing, even though I'm a Talmudic sage, to be Mesameh Chasam Akala is important. So either one, either it's Shutise, or Shutuse, or Shitase, but either one, he saw that obviously this was considered a great thing in heaven. Continuing on this theme, the Gemara says, Rav Acha Markivla, Rav Acha would ride the bride a kasve on his shoulder, umrakan, and he would dance with the kala on the shoulder. Now, Amar Rabban, the rabbi said to him, Anan mahu lamevrach, what about us? Can we do the same thing you're doing? So Amar Lahu, he said to them, Idamin alaychu kikshura, if the bride will appear to you as just a beam, meaning that you will not have immoral thoughts, hear hurim, then lachai, go ahead and do that, because there's a great simcha being mesameich the kala. But vilaylay, but if not, not, because if you're going to be holding the woman and you're going to have hurim, then that's something obviously that's forbidden. Now, continuing on this theme about obviously rejoicing by the wedding, but staying away from having illicit thoughts, the Gemara says, Amar b'shmul b'nachmeni Amar b'yeinesin, he says, Mutter lehistakel b'lefnei kala kol shavah. It's actually permitted to gaze, although it's forbidden generally to gaze at a woman, but however, it's permitted to gaze in front, in the face of the bride, kol shavah, all the 7 days of the Shavas Yimei HaMishnah. And the reason is, k'dei l'chaval b'ayla, because we want to endear the kala on her new husband, because if he's seeing everyone looking at his bride, so her beauty will enter into his heart. And therefore, for that purpose, we want to really set this marriage on the right path, we're allowed to go ahead and gaze at the bride. But the Gemara tells us, actually, it's not like that. One is never allowed to gaze at another woman, and therefore, even at a chasna, whatever the minhagim are, one is not permitted to be gazing at the face of the bride. So the Gemara continues, turn abundant. When the bride would go out from her father's household to the place where the chasna is going to be, so they would carry the kala from her father's household to there. Now, if let's say it happened that at the time that they're on the road going from her father's house to where the chasna is, at the same time there are other people carrying a corpse on their way to go bury that person in the cemetery. So you have a bunch of group of people. You have one big group of people with the kala and one big group of people with the mess. And they don't want to go ahead and mingle one with the other. So the Braisa tells us, Mavir Nesames, we divert the mess with his whole entourage in a different way. Milifnei HaKala, in front of the Kala. The Kala takes precedence. The road is for the Kala, and the mess has to go take a different way. Now, Vizeh Vizeh Milifnei Melech Yisrael, but both of them, if the Kala is on the road and the mace is on the road, either one, and then there's a Melech on the road, they have to divert before the Melech takes precedence. Now, however, the Braisa tells us that Amro Lov Al Agrippas HaMelech, but it was said about the King Agrippas, She'ava Milifnei HaKala, that he diverted his path in the path of the Kala. He saw the Kala coming and he was coming, so he went another way. V'shibchu chacham, and the sages praised him for doing that. On that, the Gemara, shibchu, they praised him? Mechlal de shapa'av, it sounds like he did an appropriate thing. But on that, the Gemara asks, but v'omer, Bashi says, afilamandoma, even according to the opinion that says, which this is a machlokes in the first perek of Masechtas Kedushin, then nasi shemachal al kavoy de kavoy de machal, even according to the one that says that a prince in the Jewish people, that it's forgiving on his honor. So his honor is forgiven, and one can go ahead and do which is not according to the honor of the prince. Now, but even according to that opinion holds, that melech shemachal al kavoy de in kavoy de machal, but if a king forgoes his honor, that's not forgone. You cannot do that. A king is not allowed to be meichel on his covet. Because Dama Maraz, the master said, it's a pasuk in Devarim that says, Saim tasim alacha melech, you should surely place upon you a king. Now, the Jewish people obviously have to have many placings. It says, Saim tasim, what that means is shetehei mosi alacha, that his awe, his fear of the king should always be upon you, which means to say that he cannot ever forgive on this honor. And that's why it says, Saim and tasim, to say that it should always be there. And if that's the case, how is it that what he did was appropriate? He was foregoing on his honor, and that he's not allowed to do. So I think my answer is, the story was precious Drachem Havoy. It was that they came to a crossroad. Now, it wasn't obvious that he went and diverted his path for her. It just looked like that, he made it look like that, oh, he just had to go that way. But they realized that he actually had to go that way, but he diverted for the bride. So they praised him because the kala, we want to do this. This is a chashivis that we show for the kala, and it's an important halacha. And however, although a king would not be able to be meichel on his honor, but the fact that he diverted and he avoided taking a problem with his covet, and at the same time honoring her, so they praised that action. Continuing on this theme, the Gemara says, Tarbon learn the braisa. Mevatlan Talmud Taira. We stop the learning of Torah, loitzos ames, to take out and bury a person that died, ulachnos es kala, and to bring the bride in from our father's house into the base chasnas, to where the chasna is. Now, Amr lova Rabbi Yehuda bar Eloi, and this is actually what they said about Rabbi Yehuda bar Eloi, shem mevatel tamat Torah, that he would stop his learning of Torah, loitzos ames, ulachnos es kala. to take out someone to be buried and to bring in the kala to the chuppah. Now, that the Braisa says, b'med v'amrum, when was this said? That's only kishein imoy called tzarkit, when the mess doesn't have the appropriate amount of people to be there for the funeral, for the burial. But if there's enough people, then we don't stop the learning of Torah for that. Now the Gemara asks, "Mekama kol tzarkeh? How much is the minimum necessity? Which, if you have that, then you don't have to stop learning." So Amar Rav Shmuel bar Ini mishmei de Rav. He says, "Name of Rav, it's Treisa Alfei Gavri. It's 12,000 men, and Veshita Alfei Shipuri, and another 6,000 that are trumpet blowers that announced to come for the honor of this person that just passed away." And some say a different version that it's Tlesa Alfagabi. He has 12,000 men, but Uminayu Shita Alfishapur. And among, from those 12,000, there are 6,000 that blow the trumpet. So either it's 12,000 or it's 18,000. Either 12,000 and amongst them is 6,000 or an additional 6,000 of trumpet blows. That's Rav's opinion. Ulama, he says, it's Kagain the Chaitze Gavri. It's that there's a wall of men, Me'avula, from the gate of the city, Vatzichra, until where the grave is. And that's in Talmudic times, the cemeteries are actually outside of the city. So from the city walls, from the gates of the city, up until the cemetery, if there's a wall of men, that means that there's enough men there by the kvur, and therefore then person learning Torah wouldn't have to stop. A different interpretation of Sheshis, V'itim, and some say it's actually Rabbi Yechon Amar, that the halacha is netilasa, the taking back of the Torah, should be kin sinasa, like the giving of the Torah, which was at Har Sinai. When we say the taking of the Torah, we mean to say when this person dies and his learning stops, so Torah is being taken away, so then we have to accord it the same honor that as the Torah was given, which is man sinasa b'shishim riba, just like the Torah was given to 600,000 men, after netilasa b'shishim riba, so too when it's taken back by Hashem, you also have to give the honor with 600,000 men. Now, however, the Gemara says, "V'han nemidul man dekari." That's for a person that has learned Chumash, Vitani, and has learned Mishnayis, but he never was someone that taught Torah. He learned Chumash and Mishnayis. However, as we continue out to Amud Beis, "Aval man demasni," but someone that taught others, less l'shura there, there's no amount, doesn't make a difference how many people are there. You have to stop your learning and go and participate in that funeral. Now, parenthetically, Rashi says, what we learn from this halacha of Rabbi Yechanan is that someone, however, that didn't learn Chumash and didn't learn Mishnayis, then you wouldn't be mevatel your learning as long as there's a minimum amount of people to go ahead and bury the person, as he quotes from the Shulchan Aruch Rav Chai. Because we're saying the whole interpretation of Rabbi Yechanan is based on the taking back of Torah to how it was given. That is 600,000 men. But if there's no Torah here that's being taken back because the person never learned, then as long as there's people that are involved in the burial, then you don't have to stop your learning for that person. Nothing more goes back to explaining our Mishnah. We said in the Mishnah that when there was a debate between the husband and wife, because they don't have the document of the ksuba, and she's saying, look, I was a besulah and got married. And he says, no, you were already married once before. This was your second marriage. So how much does she get? Amana gets Amana, and the besulah gets Masayim. So the Mishnah said that, v'myesh eidim sheyatza behinuma v'chulu, let's say if there are witnesses that at the wedding, we were at the wedding, the witnesses say, and we saw that she went out with hinuma. So then the Mishnah says that qualifies as a siman that she was a besula, because only besulais they go out with hinuma, and therefore she'll get a ksuba masayim. So the Gemara says, my hinuma? We never explained yet, what does hinuma mean? So one interpretation, the Gemara says, sukhar bar papa mishmei dezi'iri, he says, it's tanur de'asa. It's an oven shaped of asa, of myrtles, which means, say, it's a type of a chuppah, a wedding canopy, bridal canopy that's made out of hadassim, out of myrtles, that's round, which was the shape of their ovens. That type of a chuppah was what they used for basula. So if they say, we were at the wedding, and we remember the chuppah like that, so obviously she was a basula. Rabbi Yechanan, he gives a different interpretation. He says it's krisa, which is a veil that goes on the bride's head, and then it drops over her eyes, like Rashi says, like they do in his place, in Rashi's times, which we do what's called the badekin, which the chassan covers the kala's face with this veil. Now, sometimes dimimamna ba kalosa, sometimes the bride actually dozes off with the veil over her eyes, because since she can't see, so there's nothing to look at, so she just, her eyes get closed, and therefore she dozes off, and that's why Rashi says kohinuma, based on tenuma, which is dozing off. So that's Rabbi Yechanan's interpretation. So either the sign of inuma, that she's a basula, either the type of chuppah that they would have, or it's actually the badekin, which is the covering over of the veil over the eyes, which is a siman that was done for besula and not for an almana. Now the Mishnah said additionally, he said that another siman that she was a besula was if they dispensed kalayas, roasted grain for the children, they gave out this sweet type of anash, that was something that was done by besulas, and that's a sign. So the Gemara comments that Tana b'Yehuda Raya, all the cases of our Mishnah where they would do all these different simanim for a besula are what took place in Yehuda and Judea and Eretz Yisrael. But the question is, but in Bavel, what did they do to make a simon that this is a besula versus an almana? So Rav says, their duge de mishcha arishu drabban. What they would do was, actually the women would take oil and pour it on the heads of the students and rub it in their head. And that was what they would do by the weddings of besulas. So Amalei Rav Papa Labaye, Rav Papa asked Abaye, he says, I don't understand. Mishcha de chafifusa, fragrant oil that's used for shampooing kamamar, the master is saying, what does that mean? What, are these people that are the Talmud, the students, those that need their hair shampooed, to have them have oil rubbed into their head? So he was wondering regarding this minig. But Amalei, what Abaye responded to Rav Papa was, yasma, orphan, which he meant to say that you're an orphan from, you don't know them and hug them that go on, the customs. Didn't your mother go ahead at your own wedding, pour oil on the heads of the rabbis during the time of your wedding? Like this that happened at the following of the rabbis, the Asikle Lebrei, that he was involved in marrying off his son to a certain woman, which was by Bay Rabbi Bar Ula from the house of the Rabbi Ula of Amrila. And some say it was actually that Rabbi Bar Ula, he was the Asikle Lebrei Be'ahum Rabbanan, that he was involved with his son, with one of the daughters of a different rabbi. V'dar dig mishcha arish drabban, mishas maisa, and that's what they did. The women went and poured oil and rubbed it in the heads of the students. And that was a minig that they would do in Bavel to be a simon to signify that this is a wedding of a besula. Now the question is, are maltamai? But what was the simon that they would do for a widow to notify that it's a widow that's getting married? Now, Taisus points out that the question is obviously in Yehuda and Judea, where there that what they would do was in those places where the only thing they gave out was chiluk kloyes. They would give out these roasted grains. Now, therefore, the Gemara asks, Aman amai, because why do you need a simon? Why do you need a sign that it's by a widow? It's that because sometimes, actually, even without a chuppah, this was just a nash that they would give out. And therefore, what the Gemara is asking is that maybe by mistake, because they just give out nash to kids, they'll be giving out these kloyes. And if that's the case, so how will we be able to differentiate if this is a kala that's a besula or almana? Because although the minig was in Yehuda to give out klayas, but maybe just by chance they'll be giving out klayas by the wedding of almana too. Therefore, the Gemara answers: Tani Rav Yosef Amral to less loy kisani, that by a widow they didn't give out roasted grain, and that was a simon, which again Tosafot explains they were very careful not to give out this nash by the wedding of an almana, and that would be the sign that people say, yeah, I noticed that no one gave out any roasted grain. Must be that she's an almana. Now the Gemara continues explaining from our Mishnah, which explained in the previous daf, which seemingly unrelated transition from the Reish of the Mishnah to the Seif of the Mishnah, where the Mishnah quoted Umayid Rabbi Yeshua, but Rabbi Yeshua agrees, but where someone says to his friend, look, you see this field? Actually, it was your father's, but I purchased it from him. So the Mishnah said that he's believed because it's what's called hapesha aso peshit, and that's what Rabbi Yeshua is agreeing to Rabbi Gamliel, where although he argues on migui to be able to remove something from someone else's domain, he's not believed. But here, this is what's called ein shari shachar lefanecha. There was no one that entertained that this field was this person's. He's the one that made it a problem by saying it actually was your father's. Really? Yes, but don't worry, I had purchased from him. So that's believed, because if he would have been quiet, no one would have known any the better. So such a claim of Pesha Aser, the mouth that made the problem, is the Pesha that made it okay, is believed. Now, that the Gemara asks, since the reason is, as we explained on that previous daf, that the whole concept of the Reisha of Rabbi Yeshua's statement of why the person is believed is because it's not Shari Shachar, meaning a slaughtered ox. If someone comes home and sees his ox is slaughtered, definitely a big question mark, what happened? So if someone starts saying answers, yeah, but there's already suspicion here. But you just have to play the game of clue exactly who and how and what happened. But here, there's no shor shachad. No one's suspecting anything. There's no red flags. He just opened up his mouth, so he could close the mouth too. Now, but if that's the case, that no one was claiming anything before he started it, but the Gemara asks, "Valisni, let the Mishnah say, Moider Rabbi Yeshua, Rabbi Yeshua agrees, but that's someone that tells his friend, Sadazu Shalachaisa, this actually was your field, and I actually purchased it from you." In other words, what's the difference if it was his father's field, if it was his field? Why did the Mishnah precisely have to say that he told his friend, it was your father's and I purchased from him, and therefore unbelieved? Why couldn't he just say, it was yours? And you might not recall, you're such a busy man, you have a lot of real estate, but it was yours, and I actually purchased from you. Why wouldn't he be believed over there? Why do you have to go to his father? So the Gemara says, you're right. Actually, the case of the Reish could even be regarding the person himself. But Mishum the Kaboy, Lemisna Sefer, but because of the end of Yeshua's statement, because of that, we couldn't say it was talking about the person himself, rather it had to be talking about his father. Why? Because the Sefer says, Im yesh edim shishaloi, but if there are witnesses to the first half of his statement, he first said, it was your father's, first half of the statement, but I purchased from him, second half of the statement. So in the way it's said in the ratio, where there's no witnesses, of course he's believed because of Peshas or Peshetar. But if there are witnesses to the first half of the statement, that it is the father's, meaning they knew that, and he says, oh, but I purchased it from him, then he's not believed. Because, what do you mean? Who said? How can you prove it? It's not a Peshas. Because even without you, we know that it was my father's. We have witnesses that can verify. Now, on that, the question is, Hechi Dami. Now, if it would be talking about the case that we're proposing, that you'd be talking to the person himself, saying, it's yours, and I purchased it from you, how would that look like when the witness is that it's the person's, and then he's saying, but it's mine? If the person who's making the claim, saying that I purchased from you, I paid good money, and it's mine. Now, if he ate what's called the years of chazak, of establishing authority that this is his thing, meaning there's a takanas chachamim that whoever is wants to show his establishment that he owns this land, that where it used to be owned by someone else, he has to have been there for 3 years and eaten the crop for 3 years without anyone asking or making any question marks or claiming that it's not really his. Then, after 3 years, he's believed to say, I purchased it, but I lost my document because I don't have to hold on to my documents forever. If for 3 years, I'll hold on to it. If anyone comes with a claim to saying that's not mine, I can show them the document. But after that, if you ate the Shnei Chazaka, if you ate the years of Chazaka, which are 3 years, then the question then becomes, am I loy mehemen? Then actually, even if there are witnesses that says this was this person's, yes, it was his. I know that, but that was 7 years ago. I know you could say that it was his, and everyone knows it was his, but I purchased from him. Now you can ask me, where's my document? I don't have to hold on to my document for more than 3 years. The fact that I was here for 3 years is enough proof. So then he should be believed. So why would the Sefer say that he's not believed, even though there's Adam saying that it was the person's? Now, and if he did not eat Shnei Chazaka, meaning to say, just one day, it's this guy's field, and everyone knows it's his field, then for 3 days, he's walking around the field, making believe something, and then he comes and he tells everybody, hey, everybody, listen up. I know everyone knows it's his field, but I bought it from him. Of course, obviously, Pshit Laman, of course, not going to believe. Why should he believe? He has no document, no verification. So obviously, that the case of the Sefer wouldn't make sense if we said it's regarding the person himself. Because if he had the years of Chazaka, then he should be believed. And if he didn't, then it's obvious. You wouldn't have to say it as halacha. Now the Gemara asks, if that's the reason why you don't like the case to be talking about when you're talking to the person himself, although it works for the Reisha, but it wouldn't work for the Seifa, well then you have the same questions. Then even by the case of when you're saying it's his father, you have the same questions. If the one who's making the claim that he purchased it has already been there on this field for 3 years and no one ever said boo, why wouldn't he be believed? He should be believed. Even when there are witnesses that verify it was the father's, yes, it was his. But for the last 3 years, didn't you all see me here? I don't have to hold on to the thing. I had purchased it. And if he didn't hold on to this for 3 years, let's say the father just died a few days ago. And he comes a few days after the Shiva, and he says, I just want you to know that it was your father's, but I purchased from him. Now, the witnesses that everyone knows, the witnesses' documentation that was the father's, and he just comes a few days after the person passed away and says, I bought it from him. Well, pshit l'meh, of course he wouldn't be believed. What would be the chiddush in that either? So you have the same questions that you have regarding when the person himself than as his father? So I think Maran says no. Bishleima gabi ove mishkachas. It's not true. There would be a reason why we would have to say the case of the Seifa, that it would be a chiddush, it would be a novelty to say that the person's not believed. Because it actually would be talking about, when you're talking about the father, that the person who's making the claim actually has been there and eaten produce for the 3 years of the chazakah. And still we're not going to believe him. For example, as we're saying in the Sefer, when there are witnesses that verify that it was once the father's. Kugain, what would the case be talking about? It would be talking about a specific case, but it still would be a case where we could explain that it would be a chiddush, but again, that chiddush would only apply in other, and that's why our Mishnah, in the Resha, because of the Sefer, has to talk about a case of the father, not the person himself. What would the case be talking about? For example, she'achlo shtayim, where the first 2 years of when he's trying to establish a chazakah, meaning he's sitting there, he's living there now, he's eating the produce. So the first 2 years were b'chaye ha'av, were when the father was still alive. Then the father died after 2 years when this person was on the field. Now v'achas, then he continued eating the third year's produce, b'chaye b'nai, when not with the son. The father's not alive anymore, with the son over here. Now, the son was a minor, and the minor doesn't know anything about his father's estate. He didn't ruffle any feathers and make claims and say that, what's this person doing in my father's field? Now, and that is what the Gemara is answering, that we had to say the chiddush, that since this child was a minor, this third year does not get garnered together with the first 2 years. If there were witnesses to say that this was once his father's estate, although this person ate 3 years, if he doesn't have documentation, we're not going to believe him. Although he ate 3 years. Okay, Rav Huna, like Rav Huna explains, Rav Huna said, you cannot establish a chazakah regarding the property of a minor. In other words, if someone, let's say, a minor owns property, and someone for 3 years goes on one of his fields and eats the produce, that's not a chazakah. And the reason is because the fact that the child's not protesting is because he's a minor, he doesn't know any better. And therefore, that's the chiddush of this case, that although the father was, he said it was your father's, and I purchased from him, and he actually even had 3 years of chazakah, 2 years with the father alive, and 1 year in front of the child, that is the chiddush that won't help. Because you have to have 3 years in front of an understanding adult that would have protested. And the fact that he doesn't obviously indicates that it was purchased that you don't have with a minor. And moreover, Avuna says, it's actually even afili higdol. Even if after this, the child became an adult, and still this person was machzik in this field for many years, it's not going to be a chazakah at all. And the reason is because since when it started, the child was a minor, and he saw this person in this field, so he didn't know any better that this is his father's field until he got older and he heard from other people that this was actually his father's field. He says, oh, it's my father's field, so it's mine. But he says, well, the guy says, well, I was here for many years, what are you talking about? And that, the halach is, that's not considered chazakah because the child didn't know any better and the father didn't not protest for 3 years, only for 2 years, and it has to be 3 years. That's the chiddush of our Mishnah, and that's why it has to be talking about a case of the Reisha Aviv, because of the Sefer talking about Aviv. And the reason why that works is even though he ate 3 years of chazakah, the chiddush is that he will not be believed because it wasn't 3 years in front of an understanding adult. Now, that the Gemara asks, then, but Rav Huna, that says this halacha of being machzik and nichzik katan is not considered chazakah, must need an asalash minan, he's coming to teach us halacha of our Mishnah. In other words, we just explained that our Mishnah must be talking about such a case, where, because if not, it won't be a chiddush, it has to be talking about a case of where part of the chazakah was in front of a minor, and that's why it's not considered chazakah. So what exactly Rav Huna coming to teach us? This is something that was already taught in the Mishnah, and something that's taught in the Mishnah, everybody knows. So why does an Amayr have to say such halacha? So I think Gemara says two approaches. Ibaisim, if you want, you could say it's actually Rav Huna, the Yukud Demesnin Kamar. He's actually coming to teach us this precise understanding of our Mishnah, because our Mishnah doesn't say it so explicitly. Actually, we had this all this questioning. And Rav Huna is coming to tell us explicitly that what you could learn up, what you could understand from the Mishnah, where if you work through the analysis, you'll definitely understand that the Mishnah could only be talking about such a case. And from that, you could contract this conceptualization that being machzik and nichzik katan is not considered a chazakah. Or if you buy Yisrael, the Gemara says, actually he's teaching a chiddush, even if you knew that the Yikav HaMishnah, which is a filah higdol kamash, when he's teaching that even if the child became an adult, that's an added chiddush. From our Mishnah, you only know if you're machzik and nichzik katan, he's a minor. If you're there, let's say he's 4 and he has properties, so until age 9 you were machzik, it doesn't make a difference, but you wouldn't know even when he becomes an adult. Rav Huna's chiddush is that if you started being ma'asik when he was a minor, even when he's 14, 17, 23, all those years would not be chazaka since you started off when he was a minor. That's a chiddush uniquely of Rav Huna's. But the Gemara continues asking. So we said the case was told about that it's when the person says it's your father's, but I purchased from him. So the Gemara still asks, v'lesnai b'didei. We have another approach. It could still be told when someone says sadazu shel chayis, it was your field, but I purchased from you. Where if we have no witnesses, he is believed. And then the sefer says, but if there are witnesses that it was the person that he's claiming he purchased from, then he's not believed. Now the case would be talking about that even if he ate the 3 years of chazaka, he had 3 years of chazaka, and the Gemara is going to propose a case similar to how we explained it with the father. Essentially, you got the same case with the person himself, and therefore the question then comes back. So why do we have to go to the father? Say it in the case of when you're talking to the person himself. What would the case be talking about? Let it be talking about where the person that you're claiming you purchased from, he was in town for 2 years, and you were on one of his fields, and no one said, where are you? You were living there, you were eating all the produce. Now, but the third year was when the person wasn't there. What would that be talking about? Let's say he fled from the city. And on that, the chiddush would be similar concept to the case of the father, where since that year he wasn't there, so that won't count for the 3 years of chazaka. But that's a chiddush, although the person had, he was there for 3 years, and that was saying that, no, you didn't have the element of what a chazaka is supposed to accomplish, which was that an understanding adult did not protest. Oh, you didn't protest for 3 years. Obviously indicates that you are in agreement. Your silence is obviously an acquiescence of that you agree that this is my field. But since the third year was not in front of him, he fled. So therefore, that's like similar to the concept of father and child, where the child is not an understanding, consenting adult. Therefore, his silence is not acquiescence. So why can't you say the case with the person himself, which is say, I purchased from you, but it was yours, but I bought it from you. And how could I prove it? Because I was here for 3 years. But what do you mean 3 years? The third year, I wasn't here. That's not a chazaka. That would be the chiddush. Another Gemara says, no. You can't say that because Baruch Machmasmai, what would the case be told about? This that he fled. What was the reason for his fleeing? As follows. Either Baruch Machmas Nefashas, if the reason why he fled was because of he was afraid for his life, let's say the government wanted to kill him. Well, Pshitud Le Mehemen, obviously, in other words, we wouldn't have to say it even to say that that's the case that we're talking about in the Mishnah, that the person who was Machzik the third year when he wasn't there is not believed. Because the guy cannot protest. He can't send messages from wherever he is. He's in hiding. He's afraid for his life. So if he's going to protest, which means to say the word will get out from wherever he is, and then we can go back and find where this person is, it's not true that it's not this guy's field, and because he has to get the protest in before the end of 3 years, he can't. So obviously the person's not going to be believed that he's being moxic. What do you mean moxic? The person's not here to protest, and he can't even protest because he's going to be discovered. Now, and actually in the reverse way, if the reason why the person fled was because of financial reasons, that he's not afraid of the government, he's just, all of his creditors are coming after him, then actually he has to protest where he is. And what that means consequentially is that if he doesn't protest, then actually it is a good chazaka. And then actually the halacha would be that the person would be believed. So either way you look at it, the case of Baruch wouldn't work. Because if he's fleeing because of his life, then it would be too obvious. And we wouldn't even have to say it in the Mishnah that the person wouldn't be believed who's claiming that it's his. And if the guy fled because of monetary reasons, then actually it would be a chazaka, even if the person's not here. And therefore, it would be his. And the reason is because the person should protest. And the reason why he should protest is because actually, as the Gemara says, the kaimalon mechosh lebefon of hav mecha, that a not-in-person mecha, to confront the person, actually halachically is valid as a mecha. And therefore, since it works, so then your responsibility, the onus is on you, the original owner, to make that mecha, because since it would work, then you're not doing that would obviously be implicit in indicating your acquiescence and saying that it's obviously not yours, because if it works, then you should. And therefore, if it could work, and he should do it, and the fact that he's not doing it, obviously it would be chazaka, even if he fled. So either way you look at it, it's not a good approach. The Gemara illustrates this halacha. Now, like, learn the Mishnah, such as Bab Basra, that proves this point, that a mechosh shalei b'fanav even if he's far away, will work as a protest, and therefore, hence, that's an obligation to make such a protest. The Baba Mishnah there says, Shalosh Aratzis. There are three lands in what's called Eretz Yisrael that are considered distinct lands one from the other, which, and that's in regards to the halacha of l'chazaka, of establishing your authority over a land that you're claiming that you purchased. Now, what that means is that we consider them as foreign lands, which means that if, let's say, a person was in one land, and then he goes ahead and he establishes a chazaka in a different land, that will not be a chazaka if it's not in the same area as the person that you're claiming you purchased from. As the Mishnah there explains, that the three lands are Yehuda, which is Judea, Veva Yarden, Transjordan, and Vagalil, and the Galil, which, as the Mishnah explains, if Hoiba Yehuda v'chzik b'Galil, if the person was in Yehuda, and you were machzik in the Galil, or b'Galil v'chzik b'Yehuda, in a chazaka, it's not a chazaka, achi ima b'Medina, till you're in the same land as the owner, either that both are in the Galil, or both are in Yehuda. Now, even if it's in two different cities, but if you're in that main province, that main area, the main land, then that would be considered a chazaka. Now, on that, the Gemara says that Vavinba and the Gemara Babasra we had asked regarding this Mishnah, that Maikasava, what exactly does the Tana there, Mesechtas Babasra, hold? In other words, Ikasava Mecha Shlebevanav Hav Mecha, if he holds that a Mecha not in person, you could be far away, is considered a protest, well then Afila Yehuda Begalil Nami, then even if one is in Yehuda and the other one's in Galil, you should still protest wherever you are, because the protest will be a valid protest. And therefore, if you're not protesting, then actually that should be chazaka. Now, and v'ikusav v'mecha shalei b'fana, but if he holds that mecha not in person, for example, if let's say they were in one land, and it was mecha not in front of him, but it was in front of two different people in a different city, well then, that it's loyav mecha, that it's not considered a protest, well then, afil Yehuda v'Yehuda, then even if they're both in the land of Yehuda, but in two different cities, nami loy, it also should not be chazaka. And because you can't tell him you should have made a mechal not in front of him, but it doesn't work. People don't hear that. It doesn't get to the person who is claiming that he purchased it. So how do we understand this? Why does it make a difference if you're in Yehuda Galil or in Yehuda and Yehuda? Either way, one is shalei b'fanav because you're in a different city, even in the same land, and the other one is just in a different country. But if it works not in front, so it should work whether you're in a different land. And if it doesn't work not in front, it shouldn't work even in the same land. So that Amr Baba Bamamal, he said that no. Truth is that the Tana, the Mishnah Masechta Babasra, which is the primary point that the Gemara is trying to illustrate for our sugya, is that a mecha not in person, it works. And the reason is the halachic concept called chavra chavra islay. Your friend has a friend, and therefore what it means to say that if you're going to protest in front of two people, they're going to tell their friends, they're going to tell their friends, and it's going to get through the whole social network, and ultimately it's going to come to the ears of the one who's on the field. And that's going to be a warning sign for him to say, whoa, someone's making believe that I didn't really purchase it. And it's a warning sign for him to hold on to his document. And therefore, if he doesn't have his document, even though he was there for 3 years, they're going to tell him, look, you heard the protest. You knew about the claim. You should have held on to your document because you knew, obviously, that they were claiming you were just squatting and not really an owner. So therefore, it does work. But it must need in the Mishnah Masechta Babas that said, but if one person's in Yehuda, another one's in Galil, that it doesn't work. That's talking about b'shas cheir mishano. It's talking about a time of when there's inability to be able to. There's times of hostility where someone you can't get from one place to another. Where the machzik could say, "I didn't hear about his protest. No one was coming because this was a war zone or whatever it is. Where I should hold on to my document, and therefore, since he could say that he didn't hear about it, which means to say that the mechosh lebefonav won't be a valid mecha. So then again, so what that means is consequently that we can't have a taina to the one that didn't make the mecha, and therefore that won't be a valid chazak. Now, but then the question is, so Mishnah Yehuda v'Galil dinakat. So why did the town of Mishnah, if we're talking about that there was a cheirim, which is a wartime where there's a curfew and there's limitations on travel, so then even from city to city, and even if you have them both of the cities in the same Medina, in the same area like Yehuda or Galil, the same halacha should apply that the guy could claim, I didn't hear, and hence the mecha shalibafan won't be mecha. So why pick just these separate lands? So the Gemara continues, topic with Chesam et al. The reason is because the Stam Yehuda v'Galil, because generally the travel between Yehuda and Galil is kashas chayim dom. It has the same qualitative halachas as a time of chaim where people don't generally travel, and therefore, if one's in Galil, one is in Yehuda, one could claim that I never heard the words. I never heard someone saying he's protesting. He might have protested, but you know, word doesn't get here so fast, and therefore, that would be mechash lebefanav, would not be mecha, and hence that's why actually the onus is not on the one who is claiming that it's his, because making its mecha wouldn't on the one that's the original owner, because my mecha wouldn't have worked anyway. So again, what that means is that the one who's claiming it's his, actually the chazaka wouldn't work, because chazaka only works from the fact that the person didn't protest. But the reason why I didn't protest is because the protest wouldn't work anyway, because he could claim he didn't hear it, because they're in different areas, like Shas Cherem. So again, that's why that wouldn't establish a chazaka. But one thing we see from that Mishnah, Baba Basra, in the Sugya, is that you can't say, like the Gemara was proposing, to talk about a case where it's talking to the person himself, not to his father, as our Mishnah quotes. Which is to say, I purchased from you, it was yours, but I purchased from you, because the case of the Sefer, when to say that he's not believed, when there are two witnesses, we wanted to say, it's talking about that he did the 3 years of Chazakah, but the third year the guy had fled. Now the problem why you can't say that case is because if it's someone he fled because of his life, well then of course it's not a Chazakah. It's so pasha, because of course he can't protest, because then the word's going to come out where he is. But if it's because of monetary law, then actually we said the halacha would not be correct. Because our Mishnah says that it's not, he wouldn't be believed, but actually he would be believed if the guy fled for just monetary purposes and this person had been there that third year when he fled because of that. And the reason is because the guy, wherever he is, could have protested, because although he's shleib b'fonav, but a mecha shleib b'fonav havia mecha, at least if it's not during a time of cherem. And therefore you should believe him, even if this witness is saying that it was that person's, because yes, it was his, but I was here for 3 years, and that's why, again, the Gemara concludes for now, and the Gemara will continue with questions on the coming Dav, why we have to say the case that Rabbi Yeshua is Maidabai is when he's saying that it was your father's, but I purchased from him, because if it's talking to the person himself, then the Sefer wouldn't work out in the case of when there are Aden that say that it was his, and he's claiming, yes, it was his, but I purchased from him. Again, either would be Pasha that it wouldn't be Chazaka in the case that we're proposing, or actually that it would be Chazaka that it's his, if it's Baruch Machmas Moment.